news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
What is going on, Dan and Dalton? FM Talk 106.5 at 8.07 on Mobile Mornings. It is your Monday morning. Get the week off here rolling best we can, but we're going to do it understanding that it's really cold out there. I took a picture and posted it on my personal Facebook page early this morning. The moon, beautiful moon.
Man, the moon. So we were driving back from Biloxi yesterday and it was really cool. They had, the Professional Cowboy Association, PCA, and they had their rodeo finals in Biloxi, I think four rounds. So Thursday through yesterday and an afternoon finals yesterday.
So this was it.
This was it. Yeah, it was really cool. And I can tell you a little bit about the fun time we had there. But driving back, the moon, which was just making its way into the night sky, was as large as I've ever seen it. I mean, I swear, if there were activity going down on the moon, you would have been able to see it happening in real time yesterday. It was absolutely beautiful.
Was it orangish or was it just?
This was just clear. Wow. Yeah, it was gray, kind of clear. Looked just like you'd expect the moon to look, but I don't know if I've ever seen it that large. And you said you got a good picture of it, though, for the old social media.
Yeah, so this morning was more like just the moon. It was way up there, way out there. I love when you see the moon when it kind of presents itself in that way. For some reason, it seems to be in the eastern sky often. Like you were coming back, so that's where you saw it, like straight ahead, right?
Yeah.
On I-10. I love when the moon does that on certain, I don't know, early evenings. It's awesome. Yeah. I'm with you. It's worth snapping a picture.
It's beautiful. But yeah, I was thinking too yesterday being in Biloxi at the Gulf Coast Coliseum there, which I was wondering the age of that. So 77 is when they built that. So the Mobile Civic Center, or it was called the Auditorium, right, for a long time there, Municipal Auditorium. It had about a 13-year head start on the Gulf Coast Coliseum, but it still seems that they get maybe more events there than we were getting in the later years of the Civic Center.
No doubt.
And it's not like, you know, I don't know what the attendance for this rodeo final looked like Friday night or Saturday night. Yesterday afternoon, I mean, it was pretty lightly attended, but I'd say maybe 2,000, 3,000 people there for the final at this rodeo. But it was still really, I mean, there were wrecks. We saw a guy get knocked out cold right in front of us. Like, they have this ranch-style bronc riding, which I've wondered about. You go to the fairgrounds and watch the rodeo. You know, forever I just knew there were saddle bronc and bareback.
Mm-hmm.
And you got one hand down or holding the rope and one hand up. Well, a few years ago, I started seeing these in these rodeos, and they'd use two hands on these buck and broncos. And I was wondering if that was like some kind of a loophole to get more people to cover their rides or what. But they call it ranch-style bronc riding, and it's its own separate category from the bareback riding and saddle bronc riding. And the guy who ended up winning the season points total, the money total, got knocked out clean cold right in front of us at this rodeo yesterday.
What do they do when that happens? They come out and drag him off?
Well, he was, because it's, you know, a bronc, so unlike the bulls, they're able to make it pretty far down the arena gates and can sometimes be all the way at the other end of the arena by the time the cowboy comes off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened here. He was a good three quarters of the way towards the end of the arena, falls off, knocked out cold. So then you had some cowboys from the bucking chutes just sprinting, full sprint, to get to him at the end of the arena before the horse that he came off of and the pickup men came around and trampled him on the next go-around. And the pickup men did a good job of cutting the horse off, and everyone else picked this guy up and got him kind of moved off. But I'm telling you, there were a couple of bull riders who got hung up in their ropes. There were some sketchy situations, and I think there was also a bareback bronc rider whose legs kind of got twisted over his riding hand, and his hand was still stuck there in the in his cinch. And he came off the back end of this horse, but the pickup horse was right next to him, and I thought he was about to get drilled in the head by the pickup horse. So there were only about 2,000 of us out there, but it was a heck of a show in Biloxi yesterday.
Yeah. So when I go to Sports Clips around the corner here, get my hair cut, for some reason, I think they got tired of, they have to have sports on. That's the deal,
right? That's the rule, yeah.
So they've punted on Stephen A. Smith yelling at Mad Dog and vice versa.
Yeah.
Because that's annoying as all get out.
Unsettling when you're trying to cut hair at yeah. 8 a.m.
Yeah. Even to the guy sitting there just trying to get his hair cut.
Yeah.
It can be unsettling to me, too. So they switched to the rodeo channel.
Mm.
So rodeo's got their own network.
Yeah. The and Cowboy Channel.
The Cowboy Channel. Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And it seems like a lot of these guys are named Cody Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have others that are named Carson Cody. But there's a theme. There's a lot of Brocks.
Yeah.
A lot of Codys. A lot of Carsons. And a lot of these guys. I would say I was watching one time, and the guy that was closest east, like where he was from originally, would put the stats down there, you know, Cody Carson from Oregon or Wyoming. That a guy from like Wichita was the closest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, furthest east.
Yeah, this is a little different because the PCA is a southern circuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the ones who rodeo around here all the time at Robertsdale and the fairground. And so we had some Bay Minette cowboys and cowgirls
there.
Robertsdale, Foley, and some of them that are like world finalists or world champions in the PCA.
So,
a lot of homegrown talent that made their way over to Biloxi yesterday.
I didn't realize that. I knew when you went to, well, let's say I knew. Maybe I didn't. But like Robertsdale, I've been to rodeos there. I've been to Biloxi as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that they were generally populated with regional, local, in some cases, rodeo talent.
Yeah, they are. But you're right about the names. There's like a guy named Cinch, C-Y-N-C-H. Mm. One guy who I swear must have changed his name. His last name was Rebuck. Like Rebuck, R-E-B-U-C-K. But yeah, we had a good time with some of those names. And then the top barrel racer's name was Isabella. So my daughter Isabella got a kick out of that the fastest girl on a horse there had her name.
There was a great barrel racer, a young lady, might have been 10 years ago, different broadcasting life, but she was one of the tops in the country.
Mm.
And she was from, I believe, Robertsdale.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some good stuff.
Yeah.
But I was thinking through that yesterday, being in the Coliseum there. You know, I'd love if we could get the rodeo finals here in Mobile once the arena is built up. I know they have hockey, the Biloxi Breakers over there, and I don't know what their attendance looks like, but for this new hockey team coming in, my mind was kind of racing yesterday. What kind of events are they going to be able to put into the arena in downtown Mobile, and how large could they be? Hopefully we're seeing, you know, monster trucks, freestyle motocross, all the Disney on Ice stuff, and we can just pull in as many events as we can.
Yeah, that'd be nice, right? That'd be nice where you don't have to go 60 miles one way or the other, which has generally been the case, or down to the wharf for concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see early on. I think there's going to be a lot of fascination with the arena itself, you know, what kind of how beautiful the venue is itself and how accommodating it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll have all the latest bells and whistles, I'm sure. And you look at arenas today, There's a lot going on there. I don't know if it'll have the latest of the latest scoreboards and stuff like that, but I'm sure that it'll try to somewhat keep up with the times.
Yeah, well, we've seen a similar transition, I mean, with the Senior Bowl on Saturday, and for years and years and years it being out at Ladd Peebles, which had its own positives, right, and negatives, but a newer stadium in Hancock-Whitney Stadium, and I think maybe more people showed up despite the cold on Saturday than they would have if it'd been back at Ladd.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of these Mardi Gras organizations excited about the arena too. And we hear of, you know, where they're holding these balls in the meantime, heard Government Plaza and all these. So I know they're really fired up to have this Civic Center arena. And tons of people showed up Friday night. I mean, if these numbers are accurate, I saw for the Condi Cavaliers, 67,584 in attendance. I mean, that's nowhere near a record, I wouldn't think, but it wasn't an easy night to get out on Friday night with the cold weather and the wind, but over 67,000 showed up. There are other stats. So there was one lost child reported Friday night and 26 towed vehicles. But to have over 67,000 show up, I guess the number was probably a lot smaller by Saturday's parade.
Well, I mean, almost like an evacuation of people altogether. Because what I'm seeing, I got two reports as well. I combined them here. So the department, MPD, estimated, you know, nearly 68,000 on Friday. I think that's the excitement of the first night.
Mm-hmm.
and it's going to be cold, but you're thinking, but it's the first night. You only get one first night.
Right.
And it's the condies and all that. It said here that the department estimated 9,007 people attended Saturday's parade. So that would be the afternoon all the way through the evening,
man.
I guess.
Yeah.
Unless that was just Saturday and not Saturday night. I don't know. But that's quite a drop off. This weekend, I'm pretty hopeful that the crowds are going to be way up because the weather's going to be way good.
Yeah, Dr. Bill was laying out that forecast for us. So by Thursday night, will still be relatively cold, but clear, low around 35 for the polka dots who roll on Thursday night. By Friday, sunny, high in the mid-60s, and Friday night, clear, low around 41. But as Dr. Bill pointed out, Saturday, you're sunny and high near 65, and then Sunday, sunny and high near 66. So massive change in the forecast coming up. You got the polka dots Thursday night, Friday evening, Order of Inca and Order of Chaos, followed by, well, this is in Daphne, Apollo's Mystic Ladies on Friday night. Saturday, you have the Mobile Mystics, Mystical Revelers, Mystical Friends rolling at 1 o'clock. Maids of Mirth, Saturday evening, downtown Mobile. And then the Order of Butterfly Maidens and Crew of Merry Mates. They're also rolling in Fairhope Saturday evening, the Knights of Ecca Rouge at 6:30. And then Sunday night, February 8th, Neptune's Daughters and Order of Isis. So we've made it.
Yep.
We're in parade season for Mardi Gras and a lot more of them coming up with some better weather,
too. It's like the barricades are around us. There's nowhere to go. From this point on, we're here. We're kind of in it. My advice would be, and I understand it's not for everybody, and there are people who actually will rent out their house and get out of town during the most hectic part of Mardi Gras coming up a weekend after this weekend is when we're really rolling through with the Columbus, the crew of Columbus on Friday night on in. It's going to be...
So they'll rent the house out for a little change and avoid all the traffic that comes with the parking and everybody downtown.
But would it be Mardi Gras when they return to their home? Is it trash?
That's the question. Todd from Grand Bay texting in about the moon. He said, it was so bright last night, I walked out of the deer stand without a flashlight.
Mm.
It was a bright one, too, yeah. Snow moon is what Gardner says it's called. Bill says, the scandal in the auditorium by the managers hurt. Another texter, build new stadium and move Senior Bowl back to Ladd. So you want a new stadium? You want Ladd to be built, like a new stadium on the Ladd property? Or what do you mean there by build a new stadium? I'm not sure the appetite of Mobile taxpayers right now calls for another stadium.
No, I'm sure it does not. I mean, Hancock Whitney's handling things. He may not be crazy about the location. Ladd was much more centrally located in the city. But for some people, that Ladd would be much more inconvenient if you were out in West Mobile. That's one aspect of Ladd I did enjoy. And, of course, not just attending games there to enjoy a Senior Bowl or whatever, but, you know, I broadcast tons, can't even guess, high school football games at Ladd.
Well, and Jesse asks, he says, after working different games for ESPN, NBC, and Fox and attending different throngs through the years at Ladd, are there positive things about that place? I'll wait. I think so, yeah. I mean, you can make a list in the cons probably in this day and age outweigh the positives. That's why there hasn't been a game, the Senior Bowl there at Ladd in several years now. But I think maybe just the history of it and being in there for a game, for me, for some reason, I always appreciated that. But
I did too.
Not that I don't like, you know, right down the road going to Hancock Whitney and the nice loud speakers and the whole game day atmosphere there. But I think just knowing that Ladd has been around as long as it has and that so many big names had made it through over the years, and a lot of those players, you know, that come back to play in the Senior Bowl, and we saw some of that this weekend with Colin Lacey having a decent game. A lot of them played a lot of their high school ball at Ladd, and for that to be their final college game. So, yeah, maybe not a long list of positives for playing the game there, but I can certainly think of some.
Yeah, I there are some, but just the deterioration of Ladd became part of its part of the news, part of what we thought of Ladd, chunks falling out, you know, where stadium seats above and you're in area, you know, inside the
concourse
stadium,
there.
In the concourse. And I think there was a time or two where you had something unseemly like that happen. Now, we never had anybody hit or hurt or anything like that, but the stadium is pretty much talking to you at that point.
I need TLC.
I need some TLC. And the stadium actually did speak to us on FM Talk 106.5.
Who could forget?
Years ago.
We had that exclusive interview with Ladd People Stadium. 821, a lot to get to, whether it's the government shutdown, these Epstein files, a lot of talk about those.
Yeah.
And heading into week four of the legislative session, plus your texts, 251-343-0106. More Mobile Mornings on the way.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Epstein file drop again. Is that intentional? Wasn't it Friday right at the end of the week?
Usually, yeah. They call that a Friday news dump.
But if they're trying to be transparent about it, which Todd Blanche says they are, but there are some people whining about this or that, including names that should have been redacted. We're not redacted. Yeah, he said we'll get to that right away.
That's what the Wall Street Journal and I guess the New York Times were all over that, because part of the law that was passed is that they had to redact any victims' names. And I think the count that the Wall Street Journal had was like 47 victims' names were left unredacted. But this is, 3 million plus files that they released on Friday.
That's what Blanche was saying. He also said there's people saying, being political, including from a Republican from Kentucky.
Massey.
They're saying, it's not transparent. We need to see the files, writing letters and everything. And he's like saying, we're not hiding anything. At least that's what Blanche has got to say. Want me to hit you with this?
Yeah, let's hear what Blanche had to say.
Here's what he's talking about.
It's interesting. Leadership on the Hill, Congressman Massey, Senator Schumer, are quick to complain. There is no way they have spent any time looking at the materials we produce, because I know the materials we produce. We produce them on Friday. By Saturday, they're already complaining about what we did. And by the way, apparently Massey and others wrote a letter to come and review unredacted materials. I didn't get that letter yet. They leaked it to the press before they actually sent it to me. But yeah, that's absolutely totally fine. We have nothing to hide. We have nothing to hide. We never did. And our doors are open if they want to come and review any of the materials that we produced.
Todd Blanche sounds like he's had it to above his eyes, kind of like he's definitely feeling the pressure of the pressure that lawmakers are putting on his department.
Yeah.
And he's like saying, this is political, dancing around. We've made some mistakes, but at the same time, we've got them here. Come see them.
Yeah, and some would say, they'd theoretically be willing to give them more grace if they'd been a little more open and willing to release these files. But this is also, I think, a big part of the reason that they weren't wanting to just hand over all of these files without context, because you've got some big names in the mix here. And really, it sounds like if you just open up whatever the latest Forbes 100 is, that was the list that Epstein was working off of as far as his contacts, because you go down the list from Elon to Bill Gates, Richard Branson, Sergey Brin, of course, and, Steve Tisch. Giants.
Yeah, Giants owner.
Having to answer to some of the emails that were found.
It doesn't look good. On Tisch, I got a text from somebody with, maybe it was a tweet. Didn't look good for the New York Giants owner.
Yeah, and they're all having to put out these statements and clarify. He said, so on Friday, he admitted to exchanging emails about, in his words, adult women with Epstein, but insisted that he, quote, did not take him up on any of his invitations. We had a brief association where we exchanged emails about adult women, and in addition, we discussed movies, philanthropy, and investments. I did not take him up on any of his invitations and never went to his island. Also, one of the names that are in these files that were released, so Brett Ratner, who I wouldn't have known from, anyone else until this weekend, but he's the director of this Melania documentary that just came out this weekend.
Yeah.
And he was in the mix here. They said he was in a newly released images showing the Hollywood filmmaker Brett Ratner in a series of photos in Epstein's New York townhouse, sitting with Epstein and women who have been redacted, as well as Jean-Luc Brunel, a modeling agent who died in 2022 in prison awaiting trial on sex trafficking charges. So you had this big Melania documentary that Trump was wanting to have go off smoothly.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden the director is in the mix there in the latest drop of these. Plus you have Howard Lutnick, whose name came up, and some correspondence between him and and Epstein, where he was talking about bringing his family and another family to the island.
I think it's also, as you start to examine this, the level of disturbing behavior may go deeper than we thought, too. We'll talk about that. 8:30, Dr. Bill on the way.
Getting your morning moving. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Owig.
8:35 on FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings on this Monday. And now we talk with Louie Arata over at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing fine. Trying to warm up a little bit here as we get the week rolling, but you already got some rides warm over there at McConnell Automotive for folks to come check out. Great selection on the lot.
That's right. We got a couple of those Senior Bowl courtesy vehicles here, so we'll be getting those cleaned up and ready to go. If somebody wants a deal on a XL, we got them, I promise you. And, I mean, the new car side, it is just getting flooded with new cars. Getting invoices every day for Yukons, Sierras, Acadias, Terrains. Got a bunch of AT4s out there. Got some AT4Xs. So, I mean, you know, don't forget, one-stop shop, great service department, great body shop, McConnell Automotive. You can check all of our nice, fine rides out at McConnellAutomotive.com. And if you got any questions, give us a call, 251-476-4141.
Yeah, the list goes on and on for how McConnell makes it easy on the customer. But you're right. I mean, whatever size and style vehicle someone's looking for, whether it's to haul the kids around or haul a boat, you've got them covered.
That's right. And you know, Mardi Gras right here. We got a 15-passenger van. Anybody looking for that? I mean, you know, you can call 15 passengers, so come get it.
Come get it. We appreciate it, Louie. Thank you.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
And maybe you've just had it with everything, and you just want to haul butt out of town. How about that?
Yeah.
McConnell will be the last purchase you make here in the city of Mobile. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just saying some people may feel like they've had the limit. Time to get out of Dodge. It happens.
So Squirrel Vereen says, why does parade attendance really matter? It's free. If the tourists are here, they will go buy food and rent rooms anyway. Plus, with all the Mardi Gras revenue, the Tourism Bureau claims, we should see more results around town. I just like looking at the parade attendance to see how willing folks are to get out, you know, on a cold night like Friday night, over 67,000 showing up for the first parade. That's big news. And then for that number to drop down to 9,000, I guess in the grand scheme of things, you know, for us, it doesn't really matter. But downtown, the tourism department, they're wanting that number to be as high as possible.
Those numbers are for them to be able to sell them. And how about that? If that number, if we got it right, that was Friday night to Saturday night, included in that Saturday report of 9,000, it's almost like about 60,000 that went downtown Friday night were like, I'm not doing that again. They were excited. It was night number one. So they went out and it was cold, and to whatever degree they enjoyed or did not enjoy themselves as much. So on Saturday, they just said, I'm not doing that again today.
Stay by the fire.
Yeah.
Another texter, as far as the Epstein files released Friday, which we were discussing there a little bit, said, who cares if they are big names? Would they care if my name or your name was released? No, you're exactly right about that. I said some big names that came out. I guess the point I'm trying to make, and I think the point that the Trump administration were trying to make, was that once this cat is out the bag, the cat being just the mass release of these files, then the cat's out the bag. And you'll have, it appears, many people who associated with Epstein and either didn't know, you know, what he was up to, or maybe their association with him was on the periphery and they weren't, you know, visiting the island day in and day out. Not that it's necessarily a bad thing, I guess. Maybe you could say it is, but a lot of these people are having to answer for something they maybe didn't necessarily do.
Yeah, that's true.
Just because they were in the email role. But a lot of these emails that come out, like I know people are poring over those that were sent about or including Bill Gates, and they go, man, this is some weird stuff going on.
Weird stuff. And that's the thing is it's not, and I'm trying to make my way through it with some of the tweets. I'm not active on Twitter. I know I should be, but in any event, some of the tweets that came out where they are explaining what they read they're going beyond of just posting what's there. They're opining on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you have different levels of allegations of behavior that, as I'm just kind of looking this over, and the mob is gathering on Twitter, it seems like it's getting darker and darker. Mm. Like, what are the allegations against well-known people? Some of these, or even against people we don't know, but some of the correspondence with Epstein might have been a little darker. We thought what we were dealing with was sinister enough with mm-hmm. underage girls, but
they're going maybe beyond that.
Going beyond that, and if that's the case, now we're really in a realm that I didn't even see coming.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows? I guess they'll continue to release these files. But, yeah, you already think, you know, that's terrible when you're talking about child sex trafficking. But to go beyond that and do things even more sinister than something that's already nauseating and terrible, yeah. And if big names or any names, as Texter was saying there, are wrapped up in this, then, you know, will the pitchforks come out? I think the pitchforks are already out from a lot of people.
They are out, yeah.
Squirrel Vereen says, I'm of the mindset that once you've seen one Mardi Gras parade, you've seen them all. James says, remember, Trump said a lot of my friends will get hurt if we release all the files, and that's why he didn't want to. That's why. Another texter, the old saying is, you lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas. There's a lot of text on the Epstein files thing. Also over the weekend, you know, as we're in the throes of this legislative session in Montgomery, we're also getting ready for these big time primaries coming up in May. A lot of Republican primaries with some big money on the line as we head towards the November elections. And so when Trump endorsed John Wall to run as lieutenant governor, it was a bit of a surprise because John Wall had yet to officially enter the race for lieutenant governor. And then he basically forfeited his seat as the president of the Alabama GOP in order to run for office because that's in the rules. Well, since then, and it's only been a week, but an onslaught of attacks from Wes Allen, who is current Secretary of State but is running for lieutenant governor.
Right.
And he was hitting Wall because of his strange relationship with photo ID over the years. And he had this big dust-up when he tried to vote. I guess it was at 2020 or maybe 22 when John Wall tried to vote with kind of a strange ID, not like your normal driver's license, but one that appeared to, or they said, had been printed up for him. And Jim Ziegler involved in that too, and he said everything was on the up and up. But during that whole saga, it came out that he also had a Tennessee driver's license,
mm-hmm.
But it was under his, I guess, birth name. He had changed his name to John Wall over time. So over the weekend, or maybe it was late last week, you had a Republican, former State Representative Gil Isbell, who filed a residency challenge challenging John Wall's residency. So we had already seen this with the Tuberville race, that some Republicans challenging Tommy Tuberville's Alabama residency and mm-hmm. saying, listen, we think he lives in Florida and we want to, you know, challenge this. So the same thing happened with Wall, with former Representative Isbell challenging the 7-year residency requirement. He pointed to Wall obtaining a Tennessee driver's license and registering to vote in Tennessee in 2020. And he was arguing, a lot like the argument we heard with the city council race down here, District 2.
With Ingram, yeah.
He's arguing that Wall was either not truthful with Tennessee or he's ineligible to run for statewide office in Alabama. One or the other, he says. Well, Wall responded, he welcomes the challenge that he has always maintained an Alabama residence, consulted attorneys before he entered the race, and is confident he meets all legal requirements despite having a second residence in Tennessee for a period of time. And 1819, already this morning, April Marie Fogle with a story, the Alabama Republican Party Steering Committee, so the ALGOP Steering Committee, met yesterday via conference call, and they voted against a formal hearing for either Tuberville or Wall, while two other cases were referred to formal hearings. The party declined to comment further, citing the confidentiality of the process. April Marie writes, an email from ALGOP Chief of Staff Shannon Witt to steering committee members outlined the challenges that the committee would address. The party received challenges to 15 candidates. That's a lot.
Really is.
Of those,
who are the other 13?
And well, they said of those, two were considered frivolous. Those were the challenges of State Senator and Pro Tem Garland Gudger and also Hillary Hall. Four challenges were scheduled for committee review before a vote to refer them to full hearings. Among those was the challenge against former ALGOP Chairman John Wall. And they said here, let's see, Brian Taylor wrote in his response to the complaint against Wall, "The public release of the ballot challenges against both Mr. Wall and Senator Tuberville reek of being political hit jobs. They are also an abuse of the party's challenge process to exact political harm rather than to advance a serious or credible legal argument." And so the steering committee, April Marie writes, having the challenge and response before them allowed the committee to decide without the need for additional formal hearings. Three additional ballot challenges were deemed facially defective, including the challenge to Tuberville's residency. So as far as the actual GOP in Alabama is concerned, doesn't look like they're going to follow this path much further with the Wall and Tuberville challenges.
But that might not be the end of it. So that's the GOP steering committee. So that's Republican figurehead saying, okay, this we're not bothered by any of this. It can just go away. That might be best for them and their party, but there could still be investigations outside of the party that would yield something or other. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this would be a lawsuit kind of or what.
It's like a house cleaning thing. Like, look, he's running in as a Republican. We're the GOP steering committee. We're all powerful in this realm, but really, they're just the party themselves. So they're kind of swearing off it's okay for Tuberville, it's okay for Wall, but I don't know that necessarily would be the end of everything.
Yeah, and we'll have to see with those who brought those challenges, whether it's Isbell for the Wall challenge, or I believe there were numerous, may have been, was it McFeeters who challenged Tuberville,
yeah,
his residency. So
I'll tell you, he was a good, especially when it comes to Wall, a good source on all this is because he's lived all around the state, and that's Jeff. Mm-hmm. And Jeff's lived in these areas, and he's pretty culturally, he's got good cultural antenna. And so when he lives in places like up near the Tennessee line, remote areas, places where things can be a little bit different than the way we would normally assume that they would be, these different pockets of the state have different ways of going about things, mm-hmm. different churches that they attend, different everything. And so you've got a situation that I think is kind of hard to explain if you're not from there. But John Wall, he's in the middle of it, and it's not by accident because there are some cultural norms up there that are not normal in other parts of the state. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And that may not be explaining it well enough at all. I just don't want to offend anybody, but it's just kind of, it can be different up there.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because, he was the leader of the GOP for as long as he was.
Yeah.
And then this goes to the GOP steering committee, and they're kind of like, let's just move it along here and not focus on these challenges anymore.
Yeah, that might have been part of it, too, the embarrassment of it. You have the U.S. senator, can't get much more powerful than that, and then you've got a guy who wants to run for governor who was the head of the GOP. Mm-hmm. The steering committee, if they're going to defend two guys tooth and nail, that would probably be the two.
You would think so.
Yeah.
Also, with legislative session going on, and I'd love your take on this legislation. So the House last week approved a bill that would require mandatory reporters to notify the Department of Human Resources if a child smells of marijuana. It sounds like this is focused on education and schooling around the state.
Yeah, you come to you're 6 years old, you walk into classroom, and your teacher notices the odor.
Yeah, you reek of marijuana.
Knows what it is.
Yeah, so that would, I guess, with these mandatory reporters, they would by law be required to say something, see something, or I guess in this case,
smell something,
say something,
yeah.
And it would trigger an investigation similar to suspected abuse or neglect cases.
Look, this is a bill that could come with its own T-shirt.
It could smell something, say something. House Bill 72 would make smoking marijuana in a vehicle with a child present a Class A misdemeanor, which that's news to me that wasn't already. I mean, it's already illegal to be sparking it up in the car, right? But with a child there, nonetheless. So that would become a Class A misdemeanor. And supporters say the measure is aimed at protecting children from the effects of secondhand marijuana smoke. And this came about because so many educators were saying this is a real problem in the state. They're showing up at 8 a.m. for class, and you got kids coming in that just reek of their parents' weed, or I don't know if the six-year-olds are lighting it up or not. The bill drew opposition from several Democrats who warned of unintended consequences, including, they said, racial profiling and parents being held responsible for older teens, since Alabama law defines children as anyone under 19. But it really sailed through, passed the House 77-2, but there were 18 abstentions. So you have what's a real problem, and parents not looking after the kids the way they should.
Mm-hmm.
They're either smoking around them.
Yeah, smoking a blunt on the way to dropping them off.
I guess. Or the kids are smoking on their way to school. But this is, I mean, that's about as flimsy as it gets, right? If you smell something, that could trigger an investigation similar to child abuse allegations.
It could. And I guess that's talking about the unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were, say you work at a daycare, and so the children are really small, right? They're from tiny to, to infants.
To elementary age, just about,
To elementary age being the top age. Four-year-old walks in. You're responsible for that child that day. And you maybe you also, you know, you have a relationship. You're with this kid a lot, and you care for them. And they roll in one day, and they're smelling like Colombian gold.
Yeah.
And you would be concerned.
I think definitely, yeah.
So, I mean, I could see, depending on the child's age, a nursery school employee or a teacher trying to say, what do I do now?
Just trying to do what's right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So figuring out what's right, that's the part right there.
Mm-hmm.
851 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings and Dan and Dalton. And on the way.
Well, we'll let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show and get to your text before we wrap things up.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
855 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Let me tell you about Underdog Fantasy. I'm playing it all the time. You know I'll be ready for the big game, football's biggest game right around the corner. And if you want to get in on all of the action, you can right now in Alabama with Underdog. If you haven't joined yet, you're in luck because new customers score $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you make your first $5 fantasy entry. It's really easy to set up those entries. Just head to the app, make entries on if a player will go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, rushing yards, receptions, and more. If you get them right, you can win up to 5,000 times your cash. Plus, new promos dropping daily in the app. So if you like making entries and winning money, Underdog is the place to be for the big game. Of course, until then, we got plenty of college basketball still on the way and a lot of golf, which I've been making some golf entries these last few weeks. Almost had one this weekend. I had Brooks Koepka making the cut at the Farmers Insurance Open, Hideki Matsuyama finishing higher than 20.5 in
How'd
the
you
tournament,
do?
And then Chris Goddard, I had him finishing better than 10.5. Well, Koepka and Matsuyama came through for me.
Okay.
Goddard finished 18, so I was just outside. He just kept my entry from being a winner. But that's why I play. It's a lot of fun watching as you go along. And they talk about boosts. I had a 30% PGA profit boost on that entry. So there's going to be a lot more where that came from as we get ready for the big game this next weekend. What are you waiting for? Download the app today and use promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and score $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you play your first $5 on fantasy. That's promo code Dalton. Underdog, make plays, win money. Must be 19+ and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/playing-get-terms_DFS_.html. For details, if you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Jeff Poor Show on the way. State Rep. This looks like a typical Monday. State Representative Jennifer Fidler, who happens to be Jeff's state rep. She's on at 9:35. WVNN's Dale Jackson. That's always a entertaining back and forth. Mm-hmm. 10:35 this morning, and also Breitbart's Bradley J. We like him a lot. He's at 11:35 this morning.
Yeah, he'll have to let us know where things stand with this shutdown vote that's on the way.
Right there in D.C., he'll let us know.
Butterknife says, is this normal? It just seems like the Alabama legislature are trying to create a bunch of new laws. Yeah, I mean, it is pretty normal.
They do?
That is what they do, but you're right. They have all of these serious problems. I'm not saying that, you know, kids reeking of weed when they come into the school in the morning isn't a problem. It's the way you go about fixing those problems and whether you're stepping over any kind of boundaries there that folks are comfortable with. Pat said, I love this bill. If I can't drink a blanking beer and drive my kids to school, these lazy people shouldn't be allowed to chief down in the car or house on the way to school. Another texter says half the kids are on Ritalin. So,
well, it's also a safety issue if you're driving around high with your kids in tow. That ain't good.
No.
It is 8:59. Jeff Poore on the way next.